This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, I'm Liam Fox and welcome to Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia. We'll take a look at the big stories from the region over the past week. Coming up, we examine the ongoing fallout from the January 10 riots in Papua New Guinea. 2 years on from the eruption of the Hunga Tonga Hunga Hapai volcano, some residents are still living in tents and some islands might be abandoned forever. We'll have more on those stories coming up. First, Papua New Guinean businesses who've lost nearly everything in the January 10 riots are still reeling from the attacks. Several of the country's leading retailers had their shops in Port Moresby looted in the riots that followed a police strike over a reduction in pay. Halfway through a two-week state of emergency declaration, businesses are picking up the pieces. Mackenzie Smith reports.
For many businesses in Port Moresby, last Wednesday's violence came as a complete shock. The president of Port Moresby's Chamber of Commerce and Industry, Rio Fiocco, says the unrest is unprecedented for PNG and the costs in the capital are quickly rising.
It runs into the tens of millions of kina. Our biggest supermarket chain, Stop and Shop, have had, I think, three of their supermarkets burnt down and a couple more looted. Brian Bell's, our major retailer, they supply TV washing machine like Harvey Norman does, and they've lost their whole major warehouse distribution centre and, of course, all their stock, which was looted before the warehouse was set on fire. Many other smaller shops have been destroyed.
Jim Cooey is Managing Director of NWTL Group, which operates 55 retail locations across PNG, employing around 1,400 staff. He says four of their stores were either raided or damaged in the riots on January 10.
They just came in, looted, they damaged all our shop fittings and took all the stocks.
He estimates the damage will come to around 1.5 million kina, which is about 600,000 Australian dollars. For Gui, it underscores systemic failings in PNG, and he wants law and order to be put first.
You know, we have mothers out there, we have kids out there, we have high school students, university students. You know, these are everyday normal people. And they were not just out there to grab groceries. They were out there to grab anything they could. So it's really disheartening.
Navin Raju is chief executive of CPL Group, PNG's largest retailer. Three of the group's supermarkets in Port Moresby were burnt down in the rioting, and he says it could take more than a year to rebuild them. He says he's angry at the government for failing to protect his stores.
We are badly let down by the security providers of this country. So the disciplined forces are supposed to provide security to business and the community. And we're badly let down by our police force.
Raju says the group is looking at a loss of between 100 and 250 million kina over the next year, just in turnover from the stores impacted by the riots. On Friday, the company requested its shares on the PNGX market be suspended from trading until further notice. Raju says he'll be seeking government relief for the losses. Rio Fiocco from the Chamber of Commerce and Industry is worried last week's events could discourage foreign workers from seeking out employment in PNG.
If they can find anyone, they'll obviously want to be paid even more. And that will apply to all expatriate workers that will come in. Basically, no one wants to come in to work in Port Moresby. Those images have gone all around the world.
According to the Global Times, the Chinese embassy has urged the PNG government to step up efforts to protect Chinese businesses and citizens from attacks. Still, amid all the violence, the CEO of CPL Group says he's grateful to a group of betel nut sellers in the capital who stood guard for 2 days and nights to protect one of the company's supermarkets.
These guys did an amazing job because they had cuts on their face, they had cuts on their legs, were totally bruised up. They defended our shop. They ensured no one came anywhere close to our shop, so it was amazing. I mean, we are very thankful for what they've done because they've done, and that shows the good part of community, which is 99% of our community.
Navin Raju says their actions show businesses can coexist with their communities, a message he's hoping will stick in the days to come.
Mackenzie Smith with that report. Among the buildings targeted by looters was retailer Brian Bell's massive warehouse in the Moresby suburb of Gerahu, which was ransacked, then set on fire. Despite the loss, CEO Ian Clough says the company is still more fortunate than others.
In the scheme of the damage that businesses have seen, we despite the quantum of the impact, we were very fortunate by comparison. We had one site out of our 22 across the country that was impacted, and so while it's a significant part of our business, it was one site, and so there were many other companies and businesses that were impacted more heavily than we were. If you talk about our particular situation, and this is where, you know, I know you're talking about insurances, this is where it's important that I'm, you know, delicate and careful so that there's no misunderstanding. While there may have been, you know, a number of things going on in Port Moresby on that day, the situation in relation to our business was a little different. You know, there were opportunists that chose to break into our site and, you know, use means to access our site that was very secure and, you know, breach our perimeter. Once that took place, they, you know, attempted to steal product and spread the word that the site was breached, and subsequently people from all over the suburb came and started looting the building, and inevitably when that starts to take hold, it becomes quite significant. We ended up having a fire in different parts of our warehouse, and as a result of that fire, the fire systems couldn't compete with the size of the fire in the end, and the building was lost. And so we're talking 16,300 square metres of warehouse space. This isn't, you know, a tiny shed. This is, you can see this from your airplane as you fly into Port Moresby. And so a significant infrastructure and all started from a break-in.
How long do you anticipate then that it's going to take to rebuild? And do you, in any essence, expect to maybe lay off any staff?
Well, let's start with the last question first. There will be no staff. Well, we call them team members. Apologies, it's an internal lingo, but there will be no team members that will be negatively affected by this situation from an employment perspective. Of course, there's challenges with those team members with their own personal situations, but they're all maintaining employment. We're currently working through redeployment programs where 140 team members are going to be redeployed into other parts of our business. But that said, much of that is going to be short term. We've already secured warehouse space temporarily to allow us to redeploy product that is inbound already here on the wharf and in manufacture that will help recover our business very, very quickly. So in terms of how quickly and should we, the second question is absolutely. We've been here for 66 years. We are part of Papua New Guinea. We're 100% Papua New Guinea owned. Of course, we're going to think about how we build back and what we do differently to ensure that if this was to happen again, we're better protected. But it's important that I say that, you know, while Papua New Guinea has suffered the challenges over many years of, you know, situations similar to this, the events of the 10th of January were unprecedented. This was a level of chaos and activity that I've never seen, and sadly the level of destruction is such that it was a level that I'd never seen either.
Ian Clough, CEO of Brian Bell, speaking to Aggie Tupou. Meanwhile, residents in riot-affected areas are still coming to terms with the destruction. Our reporter in Port Moresby, Thierry Lapani, took to the streets to see how they're coping. He finds normalcy is returning, but the ashes of shops and businesses are a constant reminder of the violence.
Kamela Maru, a city resident for over 30 years, said she has never witnessed anything like what happened on January 10, and said it was worse than the Sandline crisis in the 90s, when civil unrest plagued the nation following a dispute between the military and the government over the hiring of Sandline mercenaries.
For almost 30 years I live here in, well, Moresby, and I haven't seen something like that. I should just say, since independence, there was nothing like that. That incident that happened on the 10th of January is worse than the Sandline crisis itself. What they did is not right, because those business houses affected, they're the ones that pay tax to the government.
Although Camilla has a degree in economics, she is unemployed and says a lack of job opportunities in the country are making people's livelihood more difficult. She called on the government to seriously look into the country's employment opportunities, but she believes a vote of no confidence in the current government is necessary.
I think the government should just give back some money to them to rebuild the buildings that were burnt down. Most of the people living in the city and PNG as a whole, right now we are all going through, I should say, high inflation. Prices of goods and services are so high and people find it hard to live in the city, so they tend to criminal activities. So that was an opportunity for them to steal. So government should look into this and create more employment, job employment, for especially the youths, those of them living around the settlements. Yes, about the future of my children, it's not looking good. Maybe we should have a vote of no confidence, change this current government.
Other residents also echoed the sentiment that confusion and disagreement between the police and the government was a major factor in contributing to the opportunism last Wednesday.
I think the whole public saw that the pressure was given by the government themselves, the police, the law itself. The law said one word and, you know, with PNG, everybody just went for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the government should look into law and order, and I think everything should be right. We need more law enforcement in communities. Communities are getting out of hand. We all human beings, I think we should be doing the right thing rather than doing the wrong thing.
Although he didn't take part in any looting, Kobau Sangru said he was given ice cream by people he knew who looted in the Sabama suburb while he watched the chaos.
Yes, to be honest, I got up from bed straight. Like I said, there was a big container of ice cream and all these things from the shop. They gave me 4 stick ice creams, so I decided to just stand and have them.
Sai Yawa, who is a private contractor and electrician, said the government needs to assist the businesses who suffered losses on the day.
Just people thought that it's an opportunity to get things, so they just do whatever, but they don't think before they do things. Yeah, I think government too should help those businesses houses, because these business houses, they gave service to the people, not the government. But it's every now and then people's lives depend on these business houses, like shops and all this. So we living in the city, it's like it's our gardening. We are not in the village so that we can go back to our garden to get food or what. We depend on the shop. So when these things happen, it's very sad for those business houses.
Mr. Yawa believes the blame should be placed with the government.
It's all going back to our government. Oh, I think this government now is maybe people think that things are not going the right way. That's why they did this, so that the government can see what is the reaction from the people.
Port Moresby resident Sai Yawa, ending that report from Thierry Lapani. Two other stories, and Nauru's decision to cut diplomatic ties with Taiwan, a long-held ally, has shocked many in the Pacific. But those who are possibly most upset are the people of Taiwan, who elected a new government only days before Nauru's announcement. The timing of the decision to recognise China is no accident, says Dr. Graham Smith from the Australian National University's Pacific Affairs Department.
I'm quite surprised because if I had a who's going to leave Taiwan last sweepstakes, I would have picked Nauru, because their history with Taiwan is very long and deep. I mean, they had 3 years where they switched across to China, but you know, when all of Nauru's other diplomatic partners were failing to step up and give them financial support, Taiwan was the one country that stepped up and said, look, we don't care how badly you've mismanaged things, we're still going to back you. So I was really surprised. Yeah, I would have had them almost last on my list of countries likely to switch, possibly after Palau. So yeah, it is a bit of a shock. But certainly the timing is unsurprising. Someone was going to be sort of made to pay for what happened in the Taiwanese election. So the timing not coincidental, but it being Nauru is a surprise to me for sure.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit more about that timing and why you think that this decision was announced so shortly? I think it was less than 48 hours after the Taiwanese election.
Yeah, no, it was really quick. So obviously it was all lined up in advance, and even, you know, the DPP have said, look, who knows, maybe if the election had gone the other way, this would have happened. But it seems likely that, you know, had the KMT managed to get across the line, which, you know, they didn't by a long stretch, this may not have happened. So that's really quite intriguing that they and it really sends a signal to the Taiwanese public and to, you know, Taiwan's erstwhile allies that if we want a country to switch, we have the financial means to make them switch at the time of our choosing.
What do you think this means for Nauru as a country? I mean, you mentioned that the nation has had a long and deep relationship with Taiwan. And do you think China will step in and step up to the plate with the similar sort of assistance? I guess, what will the implications be for Nauru?
You do see a great intensity of engagement for the first few months. The first few years after that, there's a really, you know, strong and intense engagement. So I think we can expect something similar with Nauru. And, you know, to be frank, it's a very small country, and I expect, you know, there'll be some pretty showy things built over the next few years. What's on the shopping list, I'm not sure, but I'm sure the political elite in Nauru have their shopping list.
What do you think this means for the Pacific more broadly? I mean, we know that Baron Wanga, who is a Nauruan, is stepping into the role of Secretary General of the Pacific Islands Forum, quite a, you know, powerful position there. What does this new allegiance with China mean for the region more broadly?
Yeah, I mean, of course, part of the reason why Baron Wanga, you know, was put forward for the job of the PIF Secretary General is that you know, the current government wanted him out of the country because he was a bit of a headache in opposition. So, you know, he obviously has been very staunchly and very openly pro Taiwan. So it certainly complicates things, given, you know, his expressed personal views. But, you know, this is the thing. Until a few days ago, everyone, you know, considered that you know, the Taiwan political elite to be pro Taiwan, and, you know, from now on they'll make a wonderful show of never having been pro. So, you know, this particular thing is very transactional, and, you know, today's enemy is tomorrow's friend, and that is, I think, the attitude that Baron Wanga will probably take.
That's Dr. Graham Smith from the Department of Pacific Affairs at the Australian National University, and he was speaking to Marion Farr. Finally, it was a volcanic explosion that turned the skies black and triggered a destructive tsunami. The power of Tonga's Hanga Tonga Hanga Ha'apai eruption stunned scientists across the world. But closer to home, the human toll continues. 2 years on from that dark day, some of Tonga's residents are still living in tents, and some islands might be abandoned forever. Our Tonga reporter Marion Kupu has the story.
Sundays are about two things in Tonga: cooking food and worship. For Tonga Fifolau, church looks a bit different these days. This tent church was put up almost 2 years ago after hundreds of Tongans were displaced.
While we're staying at home, we saw the sea. It's not normal.
In January 2022, Hunga Tonga Hunga Ha'apai volcano erupted, more powerful than an atomic bomb. Scientists say it was the biggest natural explosion of the past 100 years. Thick ash spread across Tonga, but it was the resulting tsunamis that caused the most damage. Waves reach as high as 45 meters. Tolofi tried to get to higher ground.
I saw a big wave come. Yeah, and I didn't know that we will be, whether or we alive or not.
Three people died. Hundreds of homes were destroyed. It wiped out whole islands, including Tolofi's home, Atata Island.
I feel emotional because we didn't believe that we will be here.
I feel emotional because we didn't believe that our little island would be in this situation. We thought we would live here forever.
Today, Dolothy is heading home for only the second time since the disaster. She's only allowed back as a visitor. After the tsunami, the island was abandoned and residents were relocated to the mainland.
Before the tsunami, we built, that's the kitchen. The kitchen on that side, the kitchen and then the bedroom and then the living room here.
She says her children miss island life.
It's very difficult because we don't know where to get the money from. But in here, if we need money, we get money from the sea. We go fishing, get money on one day, yeah. And to the resort, we go in there and work there, get some money on the week.
She says local authorities told her it's not safe for her and her family to return permanently.
If we will having another problem like the hurricanes or something like that, the sea will be in this area. So they said it's better to us to live in the mainland, not to coming back here.
Dolothy's home was one of three major island communities displaced after the tsunami. The land is owned by Tonga's monarchy.
The old people said, "This is our home. Who's gonna look after the dead? This is where we brought up. How can we leave our homes?" And I said, "We will have land for you. Because we might have another tsunami. You never know."
That was Tonga's queen, Her Majesty Nanaspau'u. The royal family offered new lands for affected communities away from disaster-prone areas.
The government, they've all looked at the situation and decided that the best thing for them is to move. And all their homes were destroyed. So even if they build again, there might be another tsunami gone again.
Tonga's government says it has plans to build 268 new homes in these new communities. So far, 120 have been completed. Tonga's infrastructure minister, Seventeen Tomo'ua, says land issues and the skill shortage have contributed to delays.
We have some challenges along the way. We are expecting that the works to be completed by June 2024.
While people wait, some in new communities are still living in tents.
We feel abandoned. It's summer and the heat from the sun is very hot. When it's windy, rainy, when it rains, the floor is soaked wet. I guess us adults is okay, but the kids and the elders.
Lupe grew up on Atata Island. She says tropical cyclones and flooding were becoming more frequent and severe. Then came the final straw, the 2022 tsunami.
Nothing has been told to us about living in tents. If a house will be built for us, or even to say that we will get a piece of land to build on.
She says she hasn't heard from authorities about her accommodations. Tonga's government says it is prioritizing citizens whose homes were destroyed, but it says it is committed to building homes for everyone displaced.
Despite the promise for new housing, for many, being displaced from their home islands has been hard to accept.
We can't forget the place in the island, our home in the island. We will never forget that.
Atata Islander Tolofi Falau, ending that report from Marion Kupu. And that's it from Pacific Review. I'm Liam Fox. Thanks for listening, and do join us again at the same time next week for more news and views from around the Pacific. Pacific Review was produced on the lands of the Bunurong and Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation.